I was given the choice today on the passage of scripture to share and to preach upon. And I returned to a story that I've spoken on both here and elsewhere a few times before. It's an important little story. It's a pivotal story, really, in Mark's gospel, although it's also found in Matthew's gospel as well. And it's well worth repeating. And it's been interpreted in various ways over the years. The woman in this story certainly has a challenging voice. She challenged Jesus and made him change his mind. Well, maybe, as we saw in the sketch. But this isn't to say that today's message is only for women. It's just that we've become so used sometimes to hearing scriptures from a male point of view that it might be strange to see it from a different angle. For example, in the dramatized reading that we just heard, which was a script from the Iona community, you might have recognized it, it does maybe seem to have a bit of a male bias. In their interpretation, it's the men who've learned a valuable lesson from this incident in which a woman challenged Jesus. The role of women in the history of Christianity was highlighted recently in the publication of a book called Band of Angels, and it was subtitled The Forgotten World of Early Christian Woman. And it was written by Kate Cooper, a professor of ancient history at the University of Manchester. And the description on the advertising describes the book as telling the surprising story of early Christianity from a woman's point of view. Although they're often forgotten, women from all walks of life played an invaluable role in Christianity's growth to become a world religion. It has small stories within it of peasants, empresses, and independent businesswomen, and describes how they mobilized their friends and their family to spread the word from household to household. It goes on to the advertising blurb goes on to describe that, for the most part, women in the ancient world lived out their lives almost invisibly in a man's world. But these particular women, by sharing the ideas that inspired them, they changed not only their own lives, but something more. They changed the world around them. And in doing that, they created an enduring legacy. Their story is a testament to what invisible people can achieve and how the power of ideas can change history. Now, the publication of this book generated a few newspaper articles because the advertising around it suggested that these women had been airbrushed out of early church history, which apparently actually rather surprised the author. I was told by someone who knows her that Kate only wrote it out of interest, and it was to be suitable for people to sort of give as a gift, an encouraging gift, to their mum or to their auntie. She wrote it out of interest, not to raise any sort of controversy about the position of women in the early church, although I suppose she's become quite happy with the royalties the extra sales might have generated. And in our Bible story we've heard today, we've encountered another woman, an invisible woman, an unnamed woman, and she also managed to change history. I'm saying I've preached on this before, and so have other people. I've got a selection of books here of different of other people's different accounts of this story. One of the books is J.C. Ryle. Now, he's a great early preacher, and he issued these books on expository thoughts on gospel readings back in 1857. And in looking at, and it's a really interesting book if you look at it, because it's giving little stories that people can read to their servants or to people in their home group if they didn't have a preacher to come and preach to them. And he uses this story as an example of encouraging persistence in prayer and the power of intercessory prayer, because of course this woman is praying for someone else, for her child. Now, while that's certainly true, I don't know if this is quite the best story to get that message across. Maybe you're thinking of the persistence in prayer that's encouraged in the story in Luke 18 about the widow and the unjust judge, where she kept on asking him and asking him and asking him for justice. Whereas I don't really think that Jesus was being at all unjust in this story. He quickly responded to her plea. So I'm not quite content with Ryle's interpretation of this story. Another really interesting book that's just come into my hands quite recently is The Gospel in Solentimi, excuse the pronunciation, Solentinami. Now, this is an area of Nicaragua, and in the 1970s, a Nicaraguan priest, he, in home groups of the peasants, the very impoverished people living there, they discussed the stories. Quite a few of them were illiterate. They couldn't read them for themselves. So they discussed the stories slowly and had discussions about them. And in their account of discussing this particular story, one of the first comments that these impoverished peasants made to try and describe Jesus' very unusual reaction to this woman is to say, well, maybe she was rich and that's why he wasn't there to fulfill her needs, because Jesus came to the poor, which was their interpretation of Jesus' ministry, which is indeed true. He did come to the poor and the marginalized. So that's another interesting account to bear in mind. Of course, we heard the version that's out of the Wild Goose resource. Here Jesus is feeding the woman a line to which she would respond. And in it, she's challenging the prejudices of the disciples and the men around. But of course, in this, is Jesus really showing much concern for the woman herself? And that sort of is a little cause of dissatisfaction for me. Another interpretation is in the story of David Rhodes. Now, this is a very interesting account of, by a man who has learned the whole of the Gospel of Mark. And if you've got 2 hours to spare, he will recite it to you all, dramatically telling you the whole Gospel of Mark from memory. And I think that's maybe the way that the Gospel was first spread. A long time before it was written down, it would have been told around the fire. And this is how the story has carried on over the years. And he sees this story as being a very pivotal moment in the whole of the account. Jesus had been rejected by the Gentiles in the past. Remember the story of the Gadarene swine and the demons that were cast out of the man there. And this event signals a change when Jesus is invited back to Gentile territory. And it reminds us, too, that Jesus will not come into people's lives without that invitation. And I find that a very useful way of looking at this particular story. But then, of course, how can this one woman speak for the whole of her nation? And then, just finally, the account of a sermon written by a woman preacher, preaching like a woman, from a woman's perspective. And she's showing how in this story we're seeing Jesus, as we saw in the sketch, tired and irritable, human as well as divine. And the woman knew at that stage, better than he knew himself, what God's mission was. It was to all people, and God had no favourites. Now, it can help to see these stories from other people's perspectives. But in all these stories, it's important also to have that freedom, that liberty oneself, to think, well, what does this story mean to me? What's God's message to me in this story? How do I cope with this story? I used to read it and think, what if this woman had given up after that first rebuttal? After that first insult? What if she had become so humiliated, so rejected, thought so little of herself in this man's world that she shrank back and slipped out of the room. We've seen, of course, that this was a completely different reaction to her than earlier on in Mark's account to the story of Jairus, when the leader of the Jewish synagogue, he came and had a very similar request for his daughter. Jesus went with him straight away. Of course, this woman who is insulted in this way might have thought, well, here we go again. I'm just a worthless woman, and my daughter's health is worth nothing to this man who's just the same as every other man I've ever met. What would have happened if she'd have immediately left? Would Jesus have chased after her and said he was joking and he changed his mind? Maybe my thoughts at that time were reflecting a dark place I was in at the time, feeling worthless and unable to speak up for myself in the face of rejection and insult. It happens, believe me. But this story is in the Bible to teach us that that is not the way to think. No matter how worthless we may feel, how silenced, how insulted or rejected, there is a time when it's necessary to see ourselves for what we are in God's sight and realize that each one of us too is entitled to even the crumbs that fall from the table of others. I suppose your interpretation could depend on the way you identify with the characters in this story. We tend often to look at most gospel stories from the point of view of Jesus. And here we see the way that his entire mission was changing by this meeting with this challenging woman. The Wild Goose resource reading we had saw it from the point of view from the presumably male householder and of the male disciples in challenging their prejudice against this woman, this outsider, who was not one of them. But we also need to look at this encounter imagining ourselves in her position and to put ourselves there in the position for which she was commended. She's demonstrating her love and going to seek help for her child. She's demonstrating wisdom in seeking this holy man of God, whom she knew had healed other people's children. And of course, it was her courage in openly declaring her faith in the face of prejudice and the marginalization in the society of the town of the time. And she was commended and rewarded for it. Her love, her wisdom, and her courage. These are the messages that we can gain from this story of an unnamed, challenging woman of the Bible. And of course, as I said before, this isn't a message just for women, but for men and for all who feel marginalized from the benefits of being included in society or in a worshiping community. We can see this in the world around us as well, in the numbers of people without meaningful, adequately paid work in our society. We can see it in those who are in work and face the loss of benefits or pay scales so that profits are maintained for their company's shareholders. For people in the developing world who lack basic education and healthcare due to the loss of their country's revenues through corruption. And this is a story which should inspire each of us as we work for justice in our society and in the world, in whatever way we can. And we'll be bringing some of these situations to God in prayer shortly as we gather around the Lord's table. Now, I preached a first version of this sermon a few weeks ago to a small congregation who, oddly enough, all happened to be women on that day. And my closing words then were, what this story shows us is a need for us to be a part of the solution to these problems, to talk back, to challenge, to take some action. because that's how we can help to bring God's kingdom on earth. And sometimes I've found that God challenges then to put our fine words into action. The week after I preached what is basically this sermon, the phone call came in at work into the office. It was from a very senior manager asking questions about something that was going on in our workplace. And from the tone of the call and the content of it, I knew that something that wasn't right was about to happen. I'm sure you'll understand, I can't give you any details. And I did try and explain and negotiate with this very senior manager to prevent what I felt was an injustice from being done. The conversation finished, and I thought about what had been said. And yes, I did pray about it as well, as I often do during the day. And then I thought, God has allowed us email for it to be used. And this is just in full knowledge of what Jeff was saying this morning about the benefit, the downside sometimes of emails. But used wisely and carefully, it's still an effective way of communication. I wrote what I thought was a polite and structured email, setting out the situation and inviting change of the decision. And I did pray about it and think it through before I hit send, because it was going to be seen as a challenge to somebody in authority over me and others. And all the time I had in the back of the mind this example of this woman who challenged somebody in authority over her. I was going to ask you to a show of hands if you think there was a change to the decision, and of course there wasn't. My manager, who I did copy in, said it was rather stern and I shouldn't be doing things like that to a senior manager. But she understood the reason for it a bit more when I spoke to her face to face about it. And I still have my job, or at least I did on Friday. And that's a very small example of a challenge. There are many women and men and children across the world with considerably larger challenges to face. Challenges which could well lead to active persecution or even death. And as we gather around the Lord's table, we'll bear those people in mind. And I will close by repeating that what this story of this marginalized woman shows is the need for each one of us to be part of the solution to injustice in the world. To talk back, to challenge, to take some action, because that is how we can help to bring God's kingdom on earth. Amen.